So here we are again, a week later than advertised, because of our lovely chanting on the hillside last week. So just a quick recap, we are reading the Larger Pure Land Sutra, and we've seen already that, so this is taking place at the Vulture Peak, towards the end of the Buddha's life. He's giving lots of different teachings, and one day Ananda says to him, "Oh, you look particularly radiant today. Are you communing with all the other Buddhas?" And the Buddha says, "Yes, I'm particularly communing with Amida, and here's how Amida came to be." And one way of understanding the sutra is that the Buddha is trying to give an account of what he is inspired by, what he's in touch with, the sort of universal Tathagata-ness, if you like, that's in the universe. And he does this through telling the story and speaking particularly about Amida Buddha as one embodiment or one window onto this sort of universal Buddha nature that he's in touch with. And you can see parallels in the story that he tells with the Buddha's own life, which suggests a sort of some sort of allegorical nature. So we're just arriving in the sutra, in the place where the story begins. You remember last time we heard that long list of names that took us back through the generations and into a sort of mythic time. So there's no historical evidence that Dharmakara existed. So we're really looking, what is the spirit of this text? So the text goes something like this. And before Simamati, which was the last name on that huge list of earlier Buddhas we heard, long before him, there lived a Tathagata, Arahat, Samyaksambuddha, called Lokeshvararaja, Asugata, Vidyakarana Samapana, Lokavid, Purusadamya Sarati, Anuttaraya, Sasta Deva Manusyanam, a Buddha, a Bhagavat. And I spent some time looking at what all those different words mean, only to discover that there is a note at the back of the text where they're all translated. He said, so this, it says, this is a formula used in many sutras to describe a Buddha, and they're just different characteristics of what it means to be enlightened. So Sagata, the translation that's given here, it says blissed, but the one that I found earlier means one who has fared well. Vidya Karana Samapana means something like accomplished in vision and conduct. Literally it means something like sees well, and because of finishing, or finishes things properly because he sees well, so behaves properly because he sees to the true nature of things. Loka vid, vid, we have the same word video to do with seeing, and loka is world, so it's seer of worlds. Tamer of humans, attainer, one who has attained the highest enlightenment. Teacher of gods and humans, one who is awakened, one who is world honored, one who's gained perfect enlightenment. Samyaksambuddha sort of means a perfectly enlightened Buddha, so somebody who not only has had an enlightenment experience but is also spiritually mature, who's accomplished the 10 perfections and so on. So this is describing Lokeshvararaja. And the Buddha says to Ananda, "At that time, Ananda, when Lokeshvararaja preached the Dharma, there was a ruler in the land who, upon hearing this Buddha teaching the Dharma, felt a great joy in his heart and resolved to attain the unsurpassable, perfect, true way. Abandoning his throne, he became a Shramana," which means something like, literally the word means something like one who hears, but it's used to mean one who goes to seek the Dharma. "With the name Dharmakara, he became a most superlative monk of pure conduct, discernment, vigour, nobility and commitment." So there you see the parallel with the Buddha's own life. Somebody from a noble family, a ruling family, hears about a spiritual teacher, and goes off away from the spiritual life, away from the worldly life, rather, into the spiritual life. And the next section is called the Song of Praise. Song in praise of the Buddhas, which is what we recited earlier, the Tambutsuge. So the Buddha says, the Shramana Dharmakara stood up in the assembly, put his robe over one shoulder, approached and prostrated before the Buddha, Lokeshvararaja, and walked around him three times with the Buddha on his right. Then he knelt with his hands in Anjali, which is the prayer gesture that we make, and praised the Buddha, saying, your radiant face, like a mountain peak, and so on. So the couple of things to note is, he prostrates the Buddha and he walks around him three times, and the Buddha is demonstrating his trust in allowing people to do this. Usually you wouldn't allow people to get behind you in case they stabbed you in the back. The reason you only have your robe over one shoulder is so they can see that your sword arm isn't carrying a sword in it. So there's this sort of drama of displaying that you're not armed and then being trusted and allowed to walk around the Buddha. And then he's inspired and spontaneously recites this piece of poetry that we read earlier. And really, in one sense, this encounter encapsulates the whole of what the sutra is about, and it mirrors when Ananda asked Buddha Shakyamuni why he was looking so radiant earlier. It's that meeting between somebody, a spiritual seeker, and an enlightened being, or somebody who is transmitting enlightenment in that moment. So when Ananda looked at the Buddha, he said, my goodness, you're looking radiant today. And the first thing Dharmakara says when he meets Lokeshvararaja is, your radiant face, like a mountain peak catching the first burst of morning light. How awesome that is. And he goes on to describe how wonderful this Buddha is who's in front of him. And then he goes on to describe making his own vows and precepts. And then he finishes by saying, I'm not going to be able to accomplish these vows, actually, unless I rely on your spiritual power. So it starts with inspiration from this other power, from this enlightened Buddha. And it goes through his own aspirations and returns to relying on the Buddha. O you Buddha, witness my vow, my true aspiration. Establishing my vow on you gives me the strength to fulfill it. We might think of the story of Kuan Yin and Amitabha there as well. That sense that actually you can only fulfill your bodhisattva vows if you are relying on a Buddha, or even relying on the sort of enlightened nature of yourself or of the world, whatever words you want to describe that with. But you're relying on the sort of nirvana instead of on yourself. And that's the only way you can fulfill your vows. So I'm going to read a couple more verses because there's a note mentioned that Dharmavijja made that I want to read to you as well. So we get this encounter with the teacher that Dharmakara has. The Buddha carries on telling the story. Then Ananda, after he had praised the blessed Tathagata in this way, the Shramana Dharmakara said, O blessed one, I long to awaken to the fully complete, unsurpassable awakening. So many times in the course of innumerable lives have I had this longing, and long have I dedicated myself to its realization, but I still haven't got anywhere, is the sort of subtext of it. O blessed one, now that I've met a teacher, do now kindly teach me the Dharma that I may quickly awaken, that I may become a Tathagata, equal to the unequalled. O blessed one, tell me the characteristics of a Pure Land that I need to know, so that I too may extend a wonderful, marvellous, measureless Pure Land of my own. Please make me speedily realise perfect awakening in this life, so that I can uproot the pains and hardships of the cycle of birth and death. Then the Buddha Lokeshvara Raja said to the Sramana Dharmakara, "You yourself will know how to follow the practice and adorn a pure land." The Sramana then said to the Buddha, "Blessed one, I can't do it on my own. You alone can comprehend it and explain it. Explain to me how it's done, this wondrous array of amazing qualities apparent in the Buddha Kshetrayas," which is the Sanskrit for Buddha field or pure land, "of all the Tathagatas. If I hear your explanation, then I may be able to realize the characteristics of a pure land one by one." "Well, Ananda, Lokeshvara Raja, the Tathagata, Arahat Samyak Sambuddha, full of boundless compassion for myriad beings, could be busy with expanding this matter for fully a million years. Recognizing the well-meaningness and depth of aspiration of the Shamana, he said to Dharmakara, "It is as if a man were to bail out the great ocean with a ladle. In principle, one should be able to reach the bottom and find great treasure. If one has such unfaltering perseverance, surely there is nothing that should not be attainable." And that's where Dharmavij has written a note which says that there's a subtle hint of irony in that metaphor. It's pointing out the pitfall of the self-power approach. Dharmakara is full of enthusiasm to go to an extreme of holiness so that he can save all sentient beings. Lokeshvara Raja, however, is about to reveal a deeper truth. So there's something there about that, actually, that there isn't time, or it would take an eternity of time to explain even how to become enlightened, and it would take Dharmakara an endless amount of eons to reach there if he tries to go about realizing them one by one. Anyway, Lokeshvara Raja described in detail the good and bad reserved for humans and devas in the vast number of Buddha fields, and explained how some are gross and some subtle. And as he did so, Dharmakara, because of the strength of his longing, was able to see them all appear before him. He saw the whole matter with unprecedented clarity, and there arose in him a great singularity of purpose, a supreme vow. A deep and serene tranquility pervaded him, and his determination was freed from all obscuring attachment. So you could say all the ego that was wrapped up in him wanting to become a Buddha disappeared. His state was unexcelled in all the worlds. Thus Dharmakara Bodhisattva took on the supreme function, which is that of adorning a pure land, in which in his case were condensed the qualities of many more than five kalpas of practice and reflection, qualities drawn from the Buddha Kshetrayas of a myriad of the Buddhas of all the realms throughout time and space. So what happened there? Instead of practicing and trying to realize the characteristics one by one, Lokeshvara Raja described something of the essence of the spiritual life to Dharmakaya. He described in detail the good and bad reserved for humans and devas in the vast number of Buddha fields. So there's something like an explanation of karma, I suppose, but also a transmission of what it means to be in the presence of a Buddha. The word Buddha field, which later became translated as pure land, means something like a magnetic field. It's like as you get closer to somebody, you become more influenced emotionally and physically, you become more influenced by that person. So, you know, if you spend time with a spiritual teacher, you become influenced by a spiritual teacher, communities grow up around them, and so on. And these particularly powerful figures exert a field of influence. And this is not something they work hard to do, it is a result of their spiritual practice, it's a result of their own inspiration. They're inspired by something and they just behave naturally, but that influence has an effect on the people around them who also become inspired, and this is what it means to create a Buddha field. And in fact, you could say that this is the defining characteristic of a Buddha, somebody who inspires people, and the sort of, you know, we talk about Amida's Buddha field being unimpeded, so he inspires people from wherever they're from, but and that's a perfectly enlightened Buddha, but I guess anyone who's taking that function, anyone who's got their own inspiration as, and is inspiring others naturally without almost realizing it really, has some Buddha-ness about them. And that's not something that you can sort of wrap up in your ego and be accomplished by, because actually if it's working, then all you're doing is being inspired by something, and then somehow people recognize that in you and are inspired in turn by you. So this is repeated again when Ananda speaks to Buddha Shakyamuni. That's what he's recognizing in Shakyamuni in that moment, that inspiration from something. And that's why all these monks and nuns and lay people are around Shakyamuni on the top of Vulture Peak. Dharmakara goes to Lokeshvara Raja and sees it and recites this poetry and then says, "Can you tell me how to do it?" He says, "Well, I could do," but actually he describes something about Buddha feels, he gives a little Dharma talk, he keeps inspiring him, and in the process of that, this meditative state comes upon Dharmakara. His ego drops away as he realizes actually there's nothing for him to accomplish, he just needs to be inspired. So in that moment of inspiration, he took on the supreme function, which is that of adorning a Pure Land, making offerings to other Buddhas, you might say, or offerings to the world, but a very natural activity. And because of that moment of inspiration, it says here, it was as if he had practiced for 5 kalpas. And you remember, a kalpa is the time it takes a bird to fly, who's flying from one side of the desert to the other side of the desert, and dropping a single poppy seed inside a castle. It's the time it takes that bird to fill a castle with poppy seeds. So many, many lifetimes. So as if he'd done all that practice, but really all that's happened is he's encountered a spiritual teacher and he's sort of received this great flood of inspiration. And he goes on to say, "I now have the pure function of adorning a pure land." And the Buddha says to him, Buddha Lokeshvara Raja says to him, "You should proclaim this. The Tathagata approves. You have permission. Now is the right time. Stir and delight the assembly. Roar the lions, roar. Hearing this, other bodhisattvas will practice this Dharma and so fulfill innumerable great vows." And anyone who's been to an ordination ceremony will recognize that, because it's what we say at the end of the ceremony after somebody has taken their own personal vows. You now have the function of adorning a Pure Land. You are inspired and will be inspiring. And the Buddha Lokeshvara Raja is saying to Dharmakara, not only have you been inspired, you should now open your mouth and inspire other people. Dharmavijaya says, he has to share everything for the sake of all sentient beings. The declaring of the vows which follows, which we'll look at later, not today, should not therefore be seen as a means to creating a Pure Land, but rather as part and parcel of the Pure Land itself. The vows are part of the force field of the Buddha. They're a description of the Buddha field. They are the activity of a Buddha. And when a bodhisattva goes into a place where there is a Buddha, their own energies are magnified, in the same way that when somebody, if you've got a very inspiring boss and he comes to visit your workplace, you're suddenly, your energy levels go up. That's the kind of thing that we're talking about. So this whole sutra really is about transmission of the Dharma, and it's about transmission of a particular set of qualities which are outlined in the vows and which we'll go on to look at later. But we have some sense of them in the epithets of the Buddha that we heard earlier. This is, we say it's the work of the Buddhas, but really it's a sort of, when a Buddha appears, this is what they do naturally. Namo Amitabha.